大家好，欢迎收听贾拿志电台。在疫情之后的七月，因为 ABC 书展，我们再度去到了北京。相较于之前严格的进京要求、紧闭的铁门和无数次被拒之门外的经验，在疫情退潮之后，我们发现北京再次出现了一个小小的迭代时期，也由此出现了很多具有新的生命力的复合空间。穿梭于这些空间时，我们也发现了很多熟悉的面孔，他们更换了情境，甚至自己的身份，在各个地方动手 DIY 改造着他们自己的生活场景。这也不禁让人重新去审视，我们是否不该只是去抱怨无法重现的旧日文化时代，因为我们并非历史学家，可以对一个时代进行盖棺定论。相反，这些他人的尝试都在激励着我们去成为一个真正的行动者。本期我们邀请到了五金空间，也是曾经建厂空间的主理人之一何一莹。建厂空间是2008年在北京成立的一家独立运营的艺术空间，它坐落于北京市区的建厂胡同里。与其他的艺术空间不同的是，建厂并不试图把自己隐藏起来，等待着同好者的寻找，而是以一个更敞开的方式。它的临街是一面玻璃窗户，每周七天，每天24小时，你都可以在街面上一眼看到艺术展览的发生。然而随着北京的城市更新，这些空间也面临着极大的考验。在今天的讨论中，我们希望从建厂和五金的经验开始谈，聊一聊过去北京独立空间繁荣的窗口期。在当时，他们的存在向所有人证明了艺术并非仅仅是权力导向的，一切临时的空间都有着他们的可能性。我想在播客开始之前，也向聆听这期节目的大家抛出一个问题：当你得以找到任何的机会去拥有一个属于自己的空间时，你会怎么去做？
首先我们还是请尹怡来先向我们介绍一下你自己吧。
好吧，大家好谢谢。我怎么介绍我是一个美籍华人，所以就是后面我就讲 Chinglish 去介绍我自己吧。我觉得可能也是你听我说中文可能是也是有点不舒服，所以我就说英文嘛。I am Rania Ho and I have been living in Beijing for the last 20 years or so. I'm an artist and I also organize spaces as youhave been discussing, and I make a lot of things, random things that are happening in this city.
因为我们了解到就是建厂空间它一开始的时候是四面玻璃窗，但后面其实它也有过跟市政之间的这种退让，可以想请您先介绍一下建厂演变的几个阶段吗？建厂空间作为一个非常具有特殊性的艺术空间，它又是如何跟北京的城市发展所紧紧的绑定在一起的？
建厂不是四面玻璃，就是一面玻璃，就是在街面。So through the storefront window, we installed artwork inside the space, and the space is locked. So nobody worked at the space. People just walked by in the hutong, and then they would see the artwork in the inside. 所以这个也是一个很窄很小的一个胡同的一个环境，非常非常日常，非常这个北京老胡同的那种环境里面，它存在了11年半，然后我们在这个过程当中可能做了不知道多少，我可能要回去数，可能54个好像项目，54个项目，每年做4到5个，5到6个项目，每个项目就几个月。我们是完全是非商业的空间。It was our own funding, our own, out of our own pockets. We actually started with there were 4 people involved with Aerofactory at the very beginning. It was Pauline Yao, Yao Jiashan, Wen Wei, 是一个也是一个艺术家，是一个画家，Wang Wei, and myself. And so the 4 of us actually rented this small, very tiny space, 15平米的一个小小空间。And we started making work there and presenting work there in 2008, just before the Olympics. 我们是4月份好像开始 做项目。那个时候可能北京不知道，可能很多人都不知道。At that time, Beijing in 2008 was like a very interesting time because there were lots of galleries and a lot of artists. 798 was like every month, every week, there was a new gallery, like very huge, massive spaces opening up in 798. And all, not just 798, but there was this place called Jiuchang. There was like Chaochangdi. There was just like space after space. Everybody had spaces and everybody's space was massive, massive space. So, 我们就体验了这种事情，这种环境里面，然后就觉得，而且那些空间是非常商业的，非常商业的一个模式去做事情。我能理解为什么他们是非常商业，但是我们就感觉是不是有一些其他的方式去介入这个创造 ？Like, is there other ways to be creative? Are there other ways to like?Make work and present work, and is it only commercial? Is that the only reason why we do these things? And I think that for us, the answer to that was like, no, there must be another way. There must be another form to engage the city, to engage the people around us, to engage our friends who are artists. And this is the format that we came up with, which was the storefront window.And presenting pretty small scale installations in the space because it was only 15 square meters. So we were able to work on a very like human scale and make things that actually didn't require a whole lot of production money. So we had a budget for producing the work. So we would use this money that was donated to us and we would pay the rent and then we would produce the work. So the works, each of the works had a budget of like 2,000 块钱是那个预算去制作作品。And every single project had a budget about that much. And if it went over, you know, the artists themselves would actually go and find funding. So they would either go to their galleries or they would, you know, like take it out of their own pockets or, you know, find equipment or whatever we needed. It was just all because actually there was no commercial anything involved in this interaction. It was just us trying to invite people, artists we thought that would be really appropriate for the space to make new and interesting work and to respond to the space of where this place was. So it was very, very site specific. It was very much about the place.
那其实在特别是像您说到一些很商业的空间，它可能就是因为过了这个时期之后，它没有这种商业的利润所图了，那它就离开了，反而是这种就是纯个人的，它通过一定的运作模式，它可以经营的更久。
对，可能也是一个，我觉得很多空间都开始说我们是非盈利，我们要做，我们就要做非盈利空间，然后做了几个月或者一年半，然后发现这个是没有持续性，这个很难成得了这个这么一个模式去，如果你没有 support, 你怎么去做，所以他们就变成一个更商业的，因为他只能通过商业去生存。所以也不是一个，我觉得是这个过程是很最开始很多人都是非常理想，非常说you know, like we're gonna make non-profit art spaces, they're gonna be like these like amazing, you know, things, we're gonna just keep making creative, you know, giving opportunities to young artists and creative, and then 然后我们还是要付房租，这个怎么办，我们怎么办， you know, 然后他一点一点的去发展到一个商业模式，因为中国是没有这种没有 funding 去支持这种非商业，或者 you have no way, there's no real foundations to go ask for money, there's no government money to ask for, there's nothing, you know, like how do you do it? Of course these people are going to think of the most efficient way to keep being able to make exhibitions and keep showing work while keeping the space alive. And that became a problem, actually. So in this way, also, when we started, a lot of the gallerists or the people that had originally opened, you know, non-for-profit spaces, they actually had said, and I'm not going to name names, but they said, oh, 在北京是不可能做一个非商业空间，这个是没有可能性，是零的可能性。他们是直接这么说，然后我们就开这个空间也是有一种挑战，就是说我觉得是有可能性，但是你不能像你这样做，还是有一些其他的方式，我们去发现这些方式是什么，也是开始也不知道，就不知道怎么去做，就一点一点去。 怎么说，摸索这个方式，然后我们就这么多年就发现 ，OK， 这也是我们的，也是一个非商业模式，但是是非常非常低的 overhead， 就没有，是我们把所有的，就为什么没有人在建厂空间，因为我们请不了人去那儿，所以我们把那个门锁了，你就只是看通过那个玻璃去看。 Like that's easy, right? 这是一个想法，就省了一些钱。我们怎么没有人？但是我们有一些机械，我们有一些 like timers 去把那些那个电视打开，或者把灯打开，都是在这些 like small household timers. So 那些东西，我们就用一些 like very low tech solutions. To make up for the fact that we had no actual funds, you know, like we tried to be more creative about how actually present exhibitions because we had no funding. But we knew that it's like it was possible. It's still possible to make exhibitions, not in the way that maybe they were doing at 798. It was different.
所以其实刚刚颖一也向我们描述了，就是当时那个时候真的是一种摸着石头过河的状态。本身可能在这之前，国内或者说北京，它确实没有非盈利的一些艺术机构，或者说非商业的艺术机构。我们其实有一点也很好奇，就是我们之前在阅读资料的时候也发现，可能最早一批在北京的独立空间，很多它都不是一个主理人，比如说像建厂或者说像激发研究所，那他们可能是一个团队去做这一件事情，而这个团队里面它可能又有很多是本身有海外背景，或者说甚至说我们也看到像北京的 iProject Space， 它本身就是有两个德国的朋友，他们去共同运营的，就特别好奇，就想知道在这样一个过程中，就是不同的主理人之间他们是怎么样去分享经验，就又 保持可能各自的一些兴趣，或者说关注点的。特别是，当一个海外背景的人，他到北京做事情的时候，其实北京是一个特别特殊的环境。他接纳的同时，他又其实排斥很多习惯的。想知道，就比如说像您到北京之后，您跟北京磨合了有多久？然后这个空间本身的预设又跟北京这个环境磨合了有多久？
我跟北京磨合了多久？不知道。
Like forever. 我觉得关键是我们都是有不同的背景，然后也是也有王伟，王伟是本地，是北京人，而且也是在附近长大的，所以他能了解怎么去 navigate 这些东西。可能我到现在一直不是特别清楚，我大概知道，但是我做不了。 One of his roles was to do this, was to deal with actually the local conditions, 合同都是他签的，什么那个他跟邻居的关系，这都是他现在就是那个叫什么公关是吧？ he's like the PR， 也不是 PR， 那个 I don't know whatever 关系 public relations， but with our neighbors
外交官。
So that's actually really special. I think you kind of need somebody. You need one person, you know? 要不然是比较难。我觉得北京也是有一个特殊的情况，是它包容度是比较大。You know, like everybody is from a different place anyway. So it's actually a little bit easier. There's, you know, of course, there's like Lao Beijing, there's that group of people, but everybody else, you know, it's like from all over. So it's a little bit, maybe a little bit easier. I don't know.
对，当时的北京的气氛其实有一点点像柏林，就是，大家是 poor and sexy 的。
poor and sexy, yeah. It was, yeah. 是18年到差不多15年的那个 ，it's a little bit poor. It's right now. It's a little bit poor and sexy too.
比如说拿街场的经验来说，你们在北京有遇到什么困难吗？然后这些困难你们是怎么解决的？
我们还好吧，我觉得没有什么大的困难。可能最大的困难是最后要把它关，这个是可能比较可惜。胡同里面每个房子的那个背景都非常复杂 right? Like each room, like 最后那个建厂那个空间本身是一个公房，就是等于是我们的房东把这个高价的租给我们，然后他挣这个差价是吧，但是他拿到这个房子其实是非常非常便宜的，然后他就用这个差价的钱他也去租一个别的房子，或者他攒钱去给孩子 whatever， 但是他有一个资源，然后他就利用这个资源去把他自己的生活提高。每一个房子在胡同里面每一个情况都是这样的一个情况，
对，
然后他们肯定是那个，我不知道是到一定的程度肯定是这个市政府就说哎我怎么办这个。 So I think what they wereSuddenly deciding was like, okay, 够了，我们不做这个。We're gonna like 洗牌，你要用就用，你不能出租。如果是公房，就不允许出租。We're gonna like mix it all up. We're gonna clean it all up. And so, you know, 结果是我们就不能待在那个空间里，因为不只是我们，是周围的所有的房子都改了，所有的人的环境就是。他们的情况都改变了。过了几次这样的一个经验的话，你就觉得哦 ，OK， 这是很正常。This is really normal. This is how it goes. Like if you want to see what can happen here, it's just gonna change all the time. That's just normal. And so now maybe we're more used to it, or you're 也没有那么抱怨。我们就觉得、哦、OK。可能这是正常，
所以建厂存在了十多年，其实是我们可能看下来是存在时间相对比较长的一个独立空间了。
北京最长寿的独立空间，
我觉得可以真的是被称作最长寿，因为基本上看到很多可能都会止于5年，或者甚至短于5年。我觉得这可能跟你们就是那种习惯了的，习惯了他的这种四面八方的压力，或者说你们可能有更好的应对方式，我觉得也会有关联。
嗯，
可能 I think also because maybe it was from the beginning it was not commercial and the rent was low enough that we could actually afford it, and that all these things were like we understood from the very beginningthat in order to be sustainable, in order to have like to be there, to be able to be in the space for a long time, you had to keep all your expenses really, really low. You know, all your overhead, everything has to be really, really minimal. And so what can you do? And in fact, actually, that makes it kind of interesting because it makes you more creative. Because what can you do with so little money and so little, such a little space? Like it forces you to actually think about this.In a very different way than if you have a lot of resources and a lot of space. You know, you have to choose. So maybe that taught us actually to be much more flexible and much more resilient with the kinds of situations that we were dealing with and the kinds of, you know, everything was always like, we don't know, you know, we don't know. Should we keep opening this? Like, should we keep doing this thing? Every year we would have this conversation. Every year we would be like,oh, I don't know. It's a little bit mafan. Should we keep going with, you know, this AeroFactory? And then every year we would realize, yeah, actually, it's really important to actually keep going. Like, that's actually the major thing that you need to do, which is like to actually continue, because then you can keep working. Then you can keep doing more interesting things. And if you don't have the space, if you don't have the, if you don't have the resources, then it's like, oh, it's game over. But in a way, just staying alive and staying open is a little bit of a, it's like a kind of resistance.
我可以稍微再分享一点就是我的观察，因为其实刚刚听了 Rainia 说了以后，我脑子里浮现出来的就是可能马上就是最近几年广州的一些年轻的艺术创作者们他们所做的实践。因为比如说相比于上海，它确实上海或者杭州它确实也有一些新的一些小空间或者独立空间，但他们给我的感觉其实跟广州的还是很不一样。我觉得我认识的广州的那批创作者们，他们也是在用一种非常节约的方式在做他们的空间，很多空间它本身就在比如说城中村城郊，就是 一栋居民楼的其中 一居室去做一个改造。包括我也看到前两天比如说像我的一位认识的朋友，他有一个自己的小的空间，那在他跟他在跟他的朋友出去玩的时候，那个空间就会被接管，就由其他的人来运营这个空间，当然也是打引号的运营，他们会在里面组织活动，会邀请朋友来做一些新的一些活动。我觉得这种生存之道可能就是是我在可能当年的北京或者说现在北京的某一些区域和广州看到的比较明显的，就大家好像就是我想让这个空间活下去，我想持续性的去带给可能当地的人一些除了美术馆机构之外比较正统活动的一些其他的可能性。
嗯，挺好的，我觉得也是，我们只能这样去工作。 I think that that's how we have to work, you know. I think that that's actually the, as an artist with no resources, that is the kind of thinking that you need to actually engage in, and that's the kind of work that we can do, you know, like we don't have a lot of resources, but we have a lot of ideas. So, you know, like what is the most efficient, effective way to realize those things? You know, what's important in this idea? And I think that actually it's really, it's great. Actually, Guangzhou is 是一个非常非常好的一个例子. I mean,They have no resources. You know, there's no galleries there. There's no people with money buying this work. And that's like out of the picture. And then actually, that frees you up into making other choices that are probably more interesting, more engaging, and more, you know, more dynamic, and just thinking about like really what's happening around you and on the ground. And I think it's great. 我觉得挺好的。
其实刚有聊到很多，比如说像广州，然后像当年的北京，其实在中国整个城市的这种进程中，特别是从60年代到90年代，独立场所然后艺术空间也都有过一个比较繁荣的一个窗口期。但毕竟从历史上来讲，我们的实践相对于美国也好欧洲也好还处于一个非常短距离的短暂的一个状态中。拿美国举例子，其实美国也是在比如说像纽约城市的一个变迁的过程中出现了很多另类艺术空间 alternative art space。 其实这显然像国外的这些实践也是导致中国的艺术家艺术实践者开始采用同类型的行动的一个动力之一吧。您可以先和我们的观众介绍一下比如美国的情况吗？
我是在美国加州长大的，所以我可以聊一聊内部的一些情况。纽约当然是有一个很长很长的历史，但是我觉得这个你说是在中国的那个发展的很快，但是这个社会也是就是发展很快，它就跟着这个社会一起。I think it fits the situation, you know, it's like appropriate. In San Francisco, where I'm from, there is a history of a lot of artist-run spaces and alternative spaces and happenings, and I think from the 60s there's been this kind of place. It used to be a place where there was actually no, a little bit like Guangzhou, there was no commercial possibility in San Francisco. So that a lot of people actually did these things just out of interest and out of, you know, like a desire to do them and a desire to like make something happen. And I think that that there's a lot of spaces there that actually influence the way that we ran Aero Factory. I think that there's a couple places like the luggage store, which is still kind of in operation right now, but they've been around since the, oh my gosh, how long? Like 30 years. And they are actually one of the longest standing like alternative nonprofit art spaces in San Francisco. And they also took over like an old luggage shop, a place that was selling luggage, which is why they're called the Luggage Store Gallery. And they showed a lot of younger artists that were really up and coming and that have really made their place now. What was interesting about the things that were happening in San Francisco was that, and it comes back down to real estate, but the rent was really, really cheap. And so artists and organizers could actually take these spaces and do something interesting with them and then not have to think about the commercial aspect of it too much. And I think that that was a lot like what was happening in Beijing at the time. You know, there was a lot of like, the rents were cheap and the spaces were like affordable and small enough and manageable enough. And so that kind of cycle of developing an art scene is very similar. It's almost the same. It's just it's like a textbook, you know, like there's like this formula for it almost. Like, okay, there's these places that are a little bit run down, not too many people are interested. Who's interested? Artists are interested because the rents are cheap and then the spaces are maybe like a little bit strange and like non-traditional. So they go in there, they make some things, and then people start to take notice. And then people start to think, oh, this is a really cool area. I want to live there too, because there's creative people there. I want to go there too. So that people start coming to these places, partially because the rent is cheap, but also because there's other people there that are like, that are interesting. And so things start to develop, and then cafes come in because there are people there. And so they want to sell coffee. And I mean, anyways, it just like this is a cycle that repeats itself over and over again. I mean, in the West, in the US, what would happen at this point is there's a process of gentrification, right? Like, so at this point, then the rents start to go up, and then it goes up to such a point that the people that are originally living there and the artists can't afford to live there anymore. And so they all have to move out. And then the area becomes really nice and like, and very expensive and very, you know, very fashionable. It's like Soho right now in New York. Soho is like completely unaffordable. Nobody can live there except for very, very rich people and people that have been there for their entire lives. Those are the only people that can stay in Soho. So that process of gentrification is a little bit different in Beijing and in China in general, but the cycle is the same. And those kinds of cycles are ones that they nurture a kind of artistic, creative class, and they go on to make some interesting things.
Oh, 现在旧金山是太贵了，我觉得很少，现在那个艺术家都走了，都去了就是别的城市，去Oakland或者去南边的。 很少有艺术家真的是住在旧金山，如果他们能住的话，他们已经住了好久。他们有那个 rent control， 所以他们还可以保留，但是他们不能动。如果它一般的话就没了。其实，在北京也有这样的问题，就比如说之前住在黑桥，或者说住在城市更边缘一些的艺术家，他们就 越搬越远，但其实在这么遥远的一个地方做空间，你必定会有一些问题，就是关于谁去看，是吧？如果说哪怕你是一个说啊，我对所有人开放，我对我每天都开着门运营对大家，但是其实它依然限制了，就是要不就是对艺术有着热情的人，他会愿意做
两个小时的公交车或者怎么样去到这个空间里，要不就是有车一族，就不可能。
是的，是的，就是这个就是一个问题。我们现在其实我们的工作室是在罗马湖，就在顺义北边，也是一个小时多一点的去那边一个小时吧。然后也是最近做了一个在村子里，我们有个朋友也是艺术家，他们租了一个村民的房子。然后这个房子也挺有意思的，是也有一点像广州的那些房子，是独立的一个房子，两层，然后屋顶是有个阳光房，有一个露台，也是挺有意思的。所以我们就几个人就是做了一个群展，在这个空间里，是那个空间叫 BRC， 但是也是很远，也是。谁会去？要你要专门去你才能去。然后附近呢是什么？是国际学校，有一些别墅区。他们去不去？感不感兴趣？在这样的一个，我很难说。我觉得也是一样的问题。现在，所以你的观众是越来越窄。
让我们切换到下一个空间的话题，就是我们最爱的五金。
喂，你们什么时候来的
ABC 的时候
就去了
不让午餐
去特别巧，因为第二天其实我正好有一个朋友给我推荐，我们就去吃了借口那个素食，结果一开始不知道
旁边
对，后来发现就是我们又找半天发现哎，还是在同一个胡同的院子里，就很巧。
那好，那我就接着下一个就是这个问题了。其实在建厂空间运营了五年之后，你们又租下了隔壁的一个空间，并且把它改造成了一个便民咖啡馆。我之前在北京突突里看的那个采访就是说他曾经是想做一个艺术书店的，但是呢有一个厨师朋友说你们这样赚不了钱，你们开个咖啡馆吧。
对对对对，这个咖啡馆其实是四个朋友，我王卫，然后方璐也是一个艺术家，然后这个 Kin 是一个厨师，然后也是一个美籍华人，也是一个好朋友。然后我们四个人其实是最开始开五金，然后最开始我们真的想我们可以赚钱，我们可以做一个咖啡，我们都以为这个是可以的。大概一年以后，我们发现这个没有那么容易，所以我们到那个时候，那个 Ken 退出了，因为他有别的项目，他有一个真正的餐厅要开，然后方璐也忙一些其他的展览什么，所以最后是我跟王卫，我们两个也是坐在那儿，然后就想呀，这个要不要？我们要不要继续这个？最后我们决定继续，是因为它也是有一些可能性，也像建厂一样的，因为建厂是那个门是老是关的，锁着，我们见不到人，没有互动。然后我们觉得哦，可能是找一个能互动的一个地方，或者能就是有一个另外一个界面，也是可以卖艺术书。也书也是很重要的，但是不是主要的。所以这个这是对的，你听到这个故事是那个我们的厨师这个朋友说，我给你留一个墙，你放你的书，然后其他的我安排一个菜单，我安排一个咖啡，简单的咖啡，简单的吃的，然后我们就做好像早晨做早饭咖啡，一些面包，然后晚最开始的时候晚上是一个酒吧，我们晚上也开，后来我们就发现我们不太适合开酒吧，我们不太喜欢，所以我们就把它晚上就不开，就白天开，然后慢慢的，现在我们还有一个朋友是 Michael 袁，他也是一个澳大利亚的华人，然后他也加入了，所以现在是我们三个，我王卫 Michael， 然后把这个地方。也是一个非盈利，我们那个咖啡是像一个咖啡，但是其实这个咖啡的钱是就为了维持这个空间，而且这个空间这个咖啡只开一个星期开一天，
然后这一天就可以 cover 这所有的成本。
对，因为我们那天去还排队了。
对，现在是好一些了。今年是十年了，那个前面大概八年是有时候付不了房租，还是要自己要掏钱的。但是今年是还可以，然后我们就用这个模式，剩了六天，我们就给别的人，就也是有点开放，就他们可以来做组织活动，比如做那个客座服务员 guest bartender， 加饭，他们也可以过来做饭。他们我们也有一个叫微现场 tiny concerts， 有的人来做演出啊，等等，有很多不同的项目在里边。
其实我们在做 the pole 这个空间的时候，我们也是想，有时候你进到一个艺术空间里的时候，你是会有一种奇怪的压力的，就是关于我到底要怎么去看这些东西，然后我要怎么逗留，如果我喜欢的话我能待多久，这个待多久就是一个很微妙的东西了。比如说你在一个书店里可能你待两三个小时只看书的话你就会精神疲惫，但是如果说你有咖啡的话，或者说有一个媒介让你能够坐下来，然后以一个非常简单的消费去让大家进到这个空间里，其实反而对所有人是更敞开的，更开放的。
最近我们也有一个，就是我们一直在想的一个问题，就是比如说像我们自己的空间，它也是在宁波的市中心，又在一个老城区里面，那我们到底应该做一些怎么样的内容，才能让它真正的就是有点像一个 community， 或者说他做的活动是真正的具有communal 的属性的，就这个其实是我们一直在思考。然后我们也会发现，就是从建厂到五金，它所提供的内容其实是有一些变化的。可能在五金里面，你是看不到像之前那种临街的艺术展或者艺术作品，但反过来说，我可能作为一个普通的观众，我在里面的参与度又是非常高的。就像那天我们坐在那个吧台，它是一个有点像环形的吧，就不光是我跟我的搭档静怡我们在吃饭聊天，那天其实氛围就是哎，可能其他的顾客他需要拿一个果酱或者需要借用一个什么东西的时候，我们之间都会发生对话，就好像那种遥相的在打招呼的感觉。
然后那个做早餐的人他会不断的跑过来跟你聊天。
对，因为我觉得反而是通过空间的格局的变化，因为那个格局我觉得其实也很重要，它足够的窄，足够的小，其实不管是参与者甚至说主理人那个 host， 他跟我们的距离都是非常非常近的。
就是其实刚刚陈主有说到嘛，那在经营的过程中，建厂跟五金都有一种很开放的心态。然后我之前在听到，就是之前听过有一句话，就是让尘土中来的东西就回到尘土中。其实五金给我的感觉，包括建厂给我的感觉，就有点像是这样。因为这两年特别流行讲在地性，然后特别是在美术馆的空间里，就大家都在聊城市行走，然后嵌入社区这些话题。但是其实作为一个美术馆，你很难从把这个东西从口号变成一个现实，因为从地理位置，还是从地理位置上来说，就这些美术馆，就国内的美术馆，要么就是依附于房地产，要么就是在一个园区里边，它其实离市井的生活都相当的遥远。那这种所谓当代性、当代艺术的这种介入，就很容易成为一种就是逢场作戏，就是双方的逢场作戏，不管是被介入者还是介入者，大家都在扮演一个角色，就是完全切不到重点，并且后续也很难就是对这个街区也好，或者说对美术馆的研究也好，产生真正的这种影响。但其实从独立空间而言的话，他们跟公共的接触就是非常直接且赤裸的，因为不管是建厂还是706还是我们后来了解到的五楼空间，从这些名字中你就能够知道这些空间的物理特性，他们坐落在哪里。所以 其实这批空间都是真正从市井中生长出来的。如果说我们去聊嵌入社区这个理念的话，那么其实建厂也好，虎鲸也好，你只要踏出这个空间的门，你就会遭遇到日常，遭遇到市井生活。所以这部分也想请您来聊一聊，就是建厂跟虎鲸运营的过程中是否有一些邻里的故事，然后你对于这种关系是否存在某种期待，然后你又是如何去灵活反应的，就比如说邻居对你的印象。
在我们第一本那个建厂书里面，我们是有一个也是去采访我们的邻居，我不知道你们有没有看到，但是后面我觉得其实对我来说是非常有意思的，因为他们回答了我真的没想到。我真的没想到，我们问了几个问题，比如说你有没有注意到这个，因为我们的地区里面以前就住了很多国外的，然后他们都不知道，因为房租很便宜吧，然后他们就是也是一些朋友一起然后租个房子，然后我们也问了那些邻居，就说你们有没有注意到这些很多不同的人来住在附近，在近几年，然后他们也是，他们说没有注意到，所以我又啊是吧？然后他就问他们那你有没有注意到有一个展览空间在附近？然后他们说我大概看好像有，我没有太深的印象，然后我就发现OK， 他们很忙，他们也其实我们做的这些事情都对他们来说是一个非常次要的，没有那么重要。That's the reality of it. It's very very peripheral to their lives, and that'sOkay, it's like 我没有期待去要改变他们的生活。其实我期待是我可以通过他们 ，like I can learn more from them than they can learn from me. I'm not really here to teach them anything, you know. And when we set up Aerofactory, there was a time when people would ask us all the time, you know, like, is this community, you know, is this a community art project? Is this you're trying to do something with the neighbors or something like that? And the answer to that is actually Aerofactory was set up so that we could make projects, we could work with artists to realize site-specific projects. Our objective is actually to work with other artists, not to educate the neighbors, not to like change the characteristics of the neighborhood. I mean, it just so happens that they got to watch they got to look at all the exhibitions and all the work that was coming through there. They got to actually, our neighbors were the ones who actually got to live with the art on a day-to-day basis, which is really interesting, but they're not our aim. You know, like that's not the main objective. The main objective really was to create actually new, interesting, site-specific, site-responsive art. And so I think it's the same. 你现在就说那个五金的邻居或者建厂的邻居当时是不是我们主要的。You know, it's not like our objective to actually engage them.And maybe people will say that, like, that's too bad, you know, like, you had a really good opportunity. But like I was saying, that's not my job. It's not my job to educate them. I'm not an educator. You know, I'm not a social worker. I'm an artist. I'm just making some things I think that are interesting. Maybe they find them interesting, too, but I don't want to, you know, I'm not forcing it on them. It's just there. They could look at it. They could ignore it. Like, it's just there.But it's another possibility, you know, like it's another possibility, and it raises a lot of questions because they would walk by the window every day and ask, why are these people doing this thing that does not make money? Like, clearly it makes no money. Why? You know, like, and if you can plant that seed, just that one thing in them that, like some people do things and it's not for money.Then already you kind of win. Like already they have this like, what?
Wow.
they don't get it, you know, like what? So that already is like changing their thinking because they know, oh, okay, there's some group of people that will spend their money and their time doing this. That's weird. That's interesting. That's weird. And then on top of that, there's going to be like a very small percentage of people, like 2% of the people that are coming by to look at the thing, and they're going to see this exhibition in the window, or they're going to see this weird cafe, and they're going to go, this is also a way to, you can actually do this. Somebody's done it, you know, like this, it actually, you can make it work with no funding or no, you know, like no revenue stream or something like that. You can actually do this and it might help somebody find a way forward for their project or their ideas. I mean, I believe, maybe this is a little bit over the top, but I do believe that maybe we saved a few people's lives by like just existing there and having people walk by and go, oh, there are people that think like me, that think that this is interesting. You know, it's not everybody, but there's like 1% of the population that thinks that this is really interesting and that this is a way to do something. And I think that's probably worth doing just to get that 1%.
1%.
其实我们上次去北京的时候，因为在胡同里面正好也要去吃饭，也有感受到一些，就是像你刚刚所说的，就是人跟人很寻常的相遇，甚至说共生的这么一种状态，就它不是一种教育被教育，或者说我在胡同里呈现这个独立空间，我需要你就是必须接受到我的一些熏陶或者影响。因为我特别想分享一个，就当时对我们来说是一个很新奇的事情吧。就那天我们几个人要去胡同里面一家很有名的云南菜馆，就特别火的一家菜馆吃饭。其实还没走到的时候呢，在转角就看到有个老北京，他特别喜欢打理他的小院，所以他的门口有很多鸽子笼，里面就是特别美丽，有点像小的一个园林，又有很多的植物，我们就其实跟他发生了一些攀谈，就是夸他鸽子好看，或者说他的那些种的植物长得很大。但就是当时没有想到的一点是，他后来就问我们，哎，你们是不是要去那个餐厅吃饭？就是他甚至都不用就是详细的询问我们的去处，他就能从我们的那种给他的感觉里面判断出来我们要去那边。所以其实我是感觉就是这种，就是会跟你在上海啊，或者上海有很多的社区空间，也有很多那种社区店，但他的那种状态又不太一样。因为就像我们遇见那个老大爷，他已经是默认就是会有一群可能相对年轻的观众，或者说看上去不太像胡同居民的人，就专门为了这个东西去到胡同里面，就是真的是深入胡同里面，因为它的位置又特别特别的隐蔽。
对，其实就你刚才说，因为我们在之前我们还聊了一下天，然后陈初说他觉得上海的那些空间跟北京的空间之间虽然也是这种市民之间融合的文化，但是显然有很大的不同。我就说为什么有不同呢？他说因为上海的空间都在街面上，你一眼就能看到，就不管，就虽然它也是在老房子的那个状态，但它都在街面上。但北京所有有意思的地儿都是你得去找的，
而且
就是它都是一个 hidden place。
而且它真的还不太好找，因为胡同本来的格局就是它有各种的转弯，也有不同的就是左边右边你可以选择。就当我们真正去到的时候，就会有一种好像就是我走过了很长的一个迷宫，我终于就是与这个空间，或者说与这个空间的人相遇。而且五金那天也是这样的，因为它没有招牌，
我是一眼看到的。
我们就是每次就是差一点就走过的时候，一扭头发现，在那个门里面有一个很小的招牌。我觉得这种就是很符合，就是我觉得就是他需要有一个寻觅的过程，然后他来到这个空间呢，又是一种人与人可能经历了很多困难，我是指行走上的困难才相遇的一个过程。我觉得这个状态其实是 我觉得反而是比如说我们现在说的 City Walk， 或者说一些其他的一些可能公共的美术馆的活动，更能让大家真正的去进到社区的一种方式，因为你真的需要依靠地图去找。
嗯，这是一个整体的一个体验。我觉得从你出门坐地铁或者坐出租车什么，整体的一个到五金或者到建厂也是一个。It's a total experience, you know, it's everything. It's like your whole, it's a very physical, visceral experience of the whole thing. It's not just, oh, you know, 一个白盒子就是为了把所有外面的东西都去掉，它就是要一个抽空。这个是完全是相反的，就是没有抽，所有的东西都在一层一层，你没有，你分开不了。It's all part of the whole thing.
就是因为前面一直在聊一个比较偶发性的一个创造对于这个空间的，但其实我们也在思考一个问题，就是在于独立空间的存在是不是必然它会有一个寿命，不论是外部的这种影响还是内部的影响，就是可能你作为一个独立空间，你在这十年的状态里面，你是一个很亚文化的，或者说你是一个很特立独行的状态，那么你是不是在十年之后，当这些独立空间的拥有者他们掌握了话语权之后，他还是会围绕这个同样的体系的做法？其实这是一个不断的在思考的问题。包括像美国的 PS1， 其实它到现在也几乎成为了一种当代艺术的中心吧，但曾经的 PS1 其实不是这样的嘛。
对，可能不是这样的。反正我觉得每一个不同的这种机构是有不同的任务。They have different, you know, like different responsibilities in the overall ecosystem. So like comparing a museum to a small independent art space is really like, I think they have different jobs, you know, like they have different roles in this whole thing. And so that's kind of hard. And also, you know, what happens with independent spaces is they're so dependent on the person or the people that open it, you know, that run it. It's so much about your personality and your tastes and your interests or non-interests and your situation at the time. Maybe, you know, at some point, you know, life happens, you know, people, things get like, get messy and, you know, you have to go off and do something else. You have to like have families or you have to deal with like parents and things like that. So the fact that something can open for 5 years is already pretty good. You know, I think that that's all. I think that the problem is probably it should just be more spaces opening for as long as they possibly can, even if it's 1 year or 2 years, there should just be a lot more people doing whatever they want to do and not just waiting for opportunities from somewhere else, you know? Like, what is really interesting, I think, about running your own space is that you control it. It's like the only thing that you can actually control in this society. You can't control anything else. You can't even control, like, you know, where you're living or what. I mean, there's like this little space where it's like kind of magical and you can make all the decisions of how this thing is running, and that's actually really empowering and really important and really good practice for everybody actually to do something like this, even if it doesn't last very long. Even if you do it for 6 months, it's really like a it's quite transformative experience. And so I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, some people's personalities, 可能他就是往这个体系里 so, maybe that's just their taste, you know, maybe that's what they're interested in. And so that's why the spaces eventually, you know, evolve into something a little bit more institutional, something more mainstream, something more like a big museum. And maybe that's because that's what they've been interested in the whole time. But as long as like people are making things and doing things, I don't think that that's a problem. It just means the problem is that if there are only a very few number of people doing things, and it's only, you know, there are not that many choices. So it's really about like diversity, having more people, having more spaces, more projects, whatever, more going on, then that's like the healthy thing to do, right?
确实我听过很多人抱怨说啊，环境不行，环境太差了，我没法做事情了，怎么样？但是其实就像您说的，就是其实它依然有一些很微小的空间，你可以去 DIY， 哪怕你创造一个适合你的环境，那么也许有一个跟你相同爱好的人，他就会在这个环境中获得能量。
是的，我觉得这是最很自然的，会你做一个什么事情，肯定是。不可能是满意80%的人，但是可能是10%或者5%，也跟你一模一样的，就想啊，我就是要这个东西，那就挺好的，你成功了。
而且中国的人口基数这么
这样，
小众也有很多人。
还有，我觉得那个艺术家的工作的任务就是找这些缝隙。I mean, that's the whole point, right? Like, where in the society are there gaps? And where is it can we actually, like, where's there space to maneuver and space to move? I mean, I think that that's actually part of our job, to find those things. You know, that's what we should be doing. Spending more time doing.
哦，这我真的就想起了，就是可能前段时间正好也去看了广美的一个展览，就他讲到当时在东南亚、越南、泰国等等地方，甚至说像韩国啊、日本，他们就有非常多的，就真的很多很多的独立空间，就是散播在城市的各个角落，嗯，而且就是像你所说的，就是散布在一些缝隙里面。所以特别想问，就在那个时候有这么多的独立空间，那大家是一种合力协作的状态吗？我们也看到，就是好像当年北京还有第一届独立空间艺术节，也有第二届，就那时候就是它有一个非常长的一个日程表。嗯，我作为观众，我可以去到这些空间参加他们的各种活动。我特别想了解一下，就比如说当时你作为比如说空间的负责人，你对于这种艺术节的这种形式参与度是怎么样的？
我觉得这是一个很个人，我们是比较 ，I don't know， 我怎么说宅是吗？We don't really go out that much， and we don't really see people that much。We're not that social， you know。我们跟其他的空间，比如说焦作坊，当时我们也在附近也挺好的。然后复原开了那个盐 salt。空间也是在附近，我们也其实都挺好的，都有来往，但是我觉得大部分的每个人都很忙，然后就忙自己的事情，我们也不是那么就是天天在一起，偶尔能见。 I mean, I think that we're trying to be as supportive as possible, as like with the people around us. 我们也是在广州在那个观察社也是做了一个，有一个项目是我们合作，他们有我跟王卫去那边去做了展览，然后他们本来是要有一个艺术家来建厂也做展览，然后那个展览费也是建厂是赞助的一部分。Like we, you know, like we did a lot of trying to support other spaces around in different cities, and also, you know, try to be helpful and supportive of other spaces also in Beijing. 但是我觉得大部分的人都各忙各的吧。Everybody's doing their own thing.
其实就是一种 real support, 就是展览
赞助，
对，给了展览费。It's a real support.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like, 就是能 what's the most useful thing you can do? You know, like, all right, let's make an exhibition. Like, let's make two exhibitions. You know, 然后这样的也是你一起工作，你可以更多了解对方，有一个交流。有 I think that kind of thing is actually really probably very important, very useful. But we were not, you know, like, we're not so social. We're not really social people. 有一个是我跟就是焦作坊那个何英雅，
我们看过他写的文章，然后我们还在猜测，哎，你们两个是姐妹
呀？差不多吧，算。然后我们就做那个会所的展览，也是一种 support， 一种合作的，然后看看 Like, we would do things like that, but not, you know, not, 不是我们组织那个什么独立艺术节的这个，我们参与，但是我们不是我们组织的。
除了五金空间以外，因为刚刚陈主也说到，我们去借口吃了素食，吃了素菜。
Oh, yeah.
哇，天哪，太美好了！他做了七个菜，每个人只收30块钱。然后这个素菜馆就正好是之前佳作坊的参与者曲哥他做的嘛，那在跟他聊天的过程中，他其实不断的说他自己特别想把空间里所有东西都记录下来，他尝试了很多方式，比如拿一 DV 拍，然后或者说记日记，然后就各种方式想要去，因为你曾经结束过一个空间，所以你会更加珍惜在这个空间中所发生的一切东西，这也其实让我们重新去思考关于出版的功能，就是它可以跨越时间，然后跨越空间，因为它确实，因为它发生在北京嘛，像我们去了解建厂空间，就是通过建厂的虎年书，那其实这些东西在书中的再现是极其重要的，就是能够。而不是一个公众号或者说线上的一个东西，所以也想请问一下您当时对于出版的考量。
Yeah, 我完全同意你的观点。It's like publishing is really, really important. 我觉得那个可能看我们的书比真正看到建厂的观众多好几倍，是好。是吧，因为他而且他有一个时间性，就过了很多年你还是可以看到。我们现在就是正在整理五金的一本书，这个书里面也是有一些具体的，比如说我们的菜谱所有的怎么做，然后也是有一种好像是怎么做一个独立空间的一个菜谱，就我们怎么做的，然后我们的想法是什么，都是在整理的，还有以前做过所有的活动我们正在整理。
对于下一代读者来说，他就是在通过这些书去了解所有这些机构存在的东西，就像您说的这个机构，他三个月也好或者说半年也好，但只要他存在过，他就是可能需要留下一些存在的痕迹。在我们的观察里，其实北京的这些独立空间的实践体系也在不断的影响着全国各地去做这种空间的实践。它渐渐从一个中心化的只在北京、上海、广州发生的一个状态，变成了一个去中心化的遍地都有的一个现象。就比如像泉州有赤子空间的实践，重庆今年谢丁在那边开了匿名书店，杭州有卡斯普多特，然后广州也有很多特殊的小组们，这些地方其实也许他们其中的有一些人就是从北京包括宋轶他也在广州做一些事情。
对对对，
其实这些人他们可能有大部分就都是从北京出来的，因为北京现在叫脱北者嘛。
是吧，我没听说过这个词。
但是其实他们到了其他地方之后又受到当地的一些影响，从北京带来的这些理念跟当地的东西结合了起来。然后那您有过跟他们的接触吗？或者说对此您有什么观察呢？
我知道他们很多都在外面做事情，具体的事情我不是特别清楚他们做的，但是我觉得挺好的，就是互相影响吧，一代一代的，然后就看。Maybe Beijing is not so friendly for these kinds of spaces and these kinds of projects right now. Maybe it's a little bit hard, but I think that there's still spaces like 这些缝隙还在广州，还在重庆，还在。I mean, I think that those spaces still exist, and I think there's still like possibility to make some interesting things. I think it's great that not everything is concentrated in Beijing. I think it's really great that everything's going out and.Like different places are going to have different manifestations of like whatever that creative impulse is. And I think it's all good.
我之前听过一个我住在北京朋友的一个说法，他又说当你住在一个租金非常高的地方的时候，你要更多的出门，因为你如果不出门享受这个城市它的这个 很高的租金带来的一些文化的也好，或者说免费的便利的东西的话，你就相当于在给这个城市的市政投钱。
我以前住在纽约就是这个，我在纽约上学，然后你没有时间出去，我不知道听着这个人说的什么，你每天都要工作，你没有时间去看看展览看戏去美术馆， like when do you have time for that? You're working the whole time to pay rent. 你的租金特别高。
但其实纽约在这方面又其实还挺惠民的，因为你是纽约市民，你就可以去很多地方都是免费的。
Yeah, well, I think it's, I mean, it's,是很矛盾，我觉得这些东西存在在你的身边，有很多文化，很多很有意思的，然后你的时间有限，然后你看不见，但 I think it's still important. It's still important for it to be there. It's still important to try to go. Yeah, maybe. I guess so.
那最后一个问题就是想请您分享一下在海外运营独立空间的一些生存案例吧，就可能不是展览的案例，而是他们是如何去生存的。
Yeah, maybe I talked about it earlier about funding and how like there's a lot of more public funding overseas than there is here in China, so that like changes everythingYou know, you can actually have an art space that exists for 30 years because you can keep applying for money. And here, it's almost impossible for something like that to happen. But it also means that, like, when you do have the opportunity to make something, maybe it's very short, but it's very meaningful because it's all yours. You have complete control over everything, you know, once you make it. Like, you have complete control over your space. So, how do they do it?I mean, this is really complicated. This is a really complicated question because you have to discuss, like, you know, taxes and a society's taxes, and where does the tax money go, and how do they collect taxes, and then how do they redistribute money, and how do they, I mean, it's not easy to be independent. Like, there's not really an independent art space in say, for example, in the US, because everybody relies on grants and funds and foundations, and those kinds of, like, the history of philanthropy is really long, and so there's a system in place to support these kinds of spaces, so that's how they survive, you know, they use the system, there is a system. 所以很矛盾，就是你看这个你开这个空间的人是有什么样的目的，我们为什么要做这个，就好像你说背后很多都是房地产是吗，他们有一个很清楚的目的，他跟你可能跟一个艺术家的目的是完全不一样的，但是他们有 他有一个方向，然后你要如果你要用他的空间，你要承认他的存在，他可以利用文化，利用艺术项目去把它的品牌的提高。It's like, it's also very clear. Like, that's a really clear formula. And there's nothing wrong with it. Like, 如果你是也是一个缝隙，也是艺术家可以利用的一个缝隙，但是你要了解你的位置在这个大的系统里面，你就是一个在一个很小的缝隙。
是的，但其实像陈初之前去香港的时候，他去了一个楼，那个楼叫什么来着？
富德楼。
哦，富德楼，那个楼它就是在一个类似于香港的。
哦，对，
香港
啊，我知道，我去过，很酷，那个楼很酷。
对，它就是在一个 SOHO 的一个区域，然后有很多的画廊在那里，但是那个楼就是由政府支持的，它就是一个有点像是一个垂直的798，但是798拿798举例可能不太对，但它就是一个垂直的艺术空间，
嗯，
每一层都有不一样的机构。
对，不过当时因为前段时间我正好也去上海的美凯龙中心听了一个讲座，其实也有讲到就是香港的情况跟我们不一样，因为它会有香港艺术发展局，它会有这么一个机构去很强力的支持。
对，
嗯，
对。
而且如果你拿公共的钱，你拿这个税钱， 你也是有一些任务，你也是有一些限制，是吧？你也要为公共服务，所以 it's like a, it's not easy。其实很早，就是我们第二本书也是讨论这个机构化，还有什么是一个好机构，然后也是一个问题是什么是独立，你能真正的独立吗？什么是独立？ And I think this is actually a really interesting question for a lot of people. I think also even in the 在西方 in the US, or I don't think they really understand what that means because they're so used to taking this public money, or they're so used to taking this foundation money to like support all these spaces that even with the limitations of what you can do and what you can't do for a public, like they just think that that's normal. But actually, those are also like limitations, you know, like that's the money comes with like some handcuffs a little bit.
所以我想我们做得真好，就是呼应一下我们在开头提出的给大家的问题吧，就是说如果当你真正拥有了一个空间以后，你会怎么做？我觉得这其中就不光是要去思考就是什么样的独立性你可以拥有，然后你要跟周边的环境甚至你的邻居发生怎么样的互动，最重要的是我觉得就像 Rania 刚刚一直跟我们说的，就是要去做。我觉得很多时候就是你做了你才会慢慢的摸索出来一条生存之道或者应对之道。好呀，
好，我们今天的
录制就到这里
了，谢谢耶好的，挺好的，谢谢。我觉得也挺有意思的，很多人都提过的，也是想知道的一些信息吧。OK， 谢谢你们，也辛苦了。
就这样无声无息离开你，仿佛在你眼底感到无限的悲戚，好像也无。层层笼罩你的心底，也许你从来不愿告诉我，我也不想再问你为什么。夏日风一吹远，吹得无影又无踪，所以我将忘记昨夜的你。别说爱情就是你的命和心，就除了感情你都不愿再接近。破碎的心难填平昨日最新的恋情，所以我将忘记你的背影。悄悄地离去，就这样无声无息离开你，仿佛在你眼底感到无限的悲戚，好像夜雾层层笼罩你的心底，也许你从来不愿告诉我，我也不想再问你为什么。夏日风一吹远，吹得无影又无踪，所以我将会忘记昨夜的你。别说爱情就是你的命和心，碎的心难填平昨日最新的恋情，所以我将忘记你的背 心，就除了干净你都不愿再接近，破碎的心难填平，昨日最新的恋情，所以我将忘记你的背影。